So, I mean, a rather buzzy upstairs at 3 and 10, downstairs at upstairs and 3 and 10 with Juliet Burton, who's somebody I wanted to speak to for a while. Juliet, is this the show, When I Grow Up, that is, of all the shows you've done, the show you had to do?
Yeah, I think you're quite right. That's a very astute question. Yeah, I was performing with Lizzie Mace for a few years, and I had the idea for this show of, you know, is what we do who we are, and the idea of realising childhood dreams. And then the more it progressed, the more I realised that I felt like it was the right kind of vehicle to start coming out, in effect, about my mental health history. And I got such an amazing reception from audiences about them opening up about their problems, about their people they've known with mental health problems, all kinds of different mental health problems as well. And it was an incredible realization that this is the right time to talk about these things and be more open. And that set my little brain firing off in all directions with new ideas for new shows, not just about mental health, but about subjects that perhaps people want to talk about that wouldn't be palatable unless it was given a conduit like entertainment or comedy, or this is now termed docu-comedy. And I think I'm a docu-comedian, which is a very strange thing. I think I'm the only one of them, so that's good. So yes, I definitely, as soon as I had the idea, I just felt like I had to do it, and if I didn't do it, then I'd be denying a part of me a voice.
I guess without, I don't think this is a spoiler, but when we start bearing witness to this show, you know, it's not that clear this is going to be so much your story.
Yeah, well, that's kind of on purpose with all my shows, is that I like there to be a universal question that everyone can access. So for this one, it is, what did you want to be when you were little, and is what we do who we are? And the question of growing up. So that's all very universal, and everyone once had a dream, whether you're David Hasselhoff or whether you're Joe Bloggs, you had once had a dream of what you wanted to be when you grew up. And that's kind of about, you know, a good 40 minutes of the show is talking about what I wanted to be and me going off and trying to be all the things I wanted to be when I was a child. And then, yeah, no spoiler, I think it's out there now pretty much, that there's a personal story in there that is extremely personal and very, very honest. And I think my intention was to make that less easy story more accessible through a universal story. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to do with my future shows as well.
There's a very powerful word in the English language. I think it's one of the few that actually, if you say it, it can mean two different things in quite the opposite of each other. And it's the word before. And it's the idea that before is what went behind you in time, but also you can put things before you, meaning in front of you. And in this show, is that why there's power here? Because you've actually put your childhood right in front of you and then in front of the audience?
That's a good observation as well. Yeah, I think a lot of my personal identity now, I've got to I enjoy my childhood self, because we've all got that little child self inside of us, and this one is very much, I wanted to embrace that side of me, and that's, I think, fanned the fuels of my ambition, because once you embrace that childhood self that does dream big and wants to do anything, go anywhere and be anything and everything, and believes in magic and believes in the power of dreams, then I think a lot of people who work in the entertainment industry and a lot of people who work in comedy inhabit that part of yourself very much, but you just have to pair that up with the adult side of you to put in the hard work. And I think, again, people really respond to that, that a lot of people, the people who love this show the most are the people who like to think they've never grown up and do still adore that childhood part of themselves. Yeah.
And now, forgive me, but I'm going to psychoanalyse you, but without, again, trying to give too much away about the show, but a lot of people would say that theatre makers, comedy makers, people on stage, people that start to develop acclaim, fame, fortune, your own flyer's got all kinds of positive reviews all over it, is you have to grow shows, you have to plant seeds, and so you farm. And, you know, you have to bake things and watch them rise. And, you know, you can be royalty in this world and people can follow you and praise you and all that. I mean, all the things actually in your life that maybe you could have been, sort of you are, aren't you?
That's so lovely. I hadn't thought of it like that. Yeah. I mean, yes, I think when I first had the idea, I kind of gently wanted to see. So I wanted to be a ballerina, a baker, an artist, a farmer, a pop star, and a Muppet. And all of those things, there were elements of them, like you say, that I really still feel like I have and I still am achieving. So there was originally something that drew me to that idea. So say, for example, like you say, that the princess, I love the idea that being a princess meant I could wear pretty clothes, and also that I was special, that I like the idea of that. So but we're all special, and I can wear pretty clothes as long as they come from a discount store. Psychoanalyzing that, really, yeah, we all do have to nurture things as well, and this one certainly does feel like it's a growing show, that people are cottoning onto it. Certainly I get to meet an awful lot of people through it, which is lovely. So yes, I think you're quite right. I always wanted to be all those things for the reasons that I'm still able to enjoy through this amazing multifaceted career, because you can have, if you're in entertainment or in comedy, then you really can pick and choose what the hell you want to be. You don't have to be any one particular, you don't have to go into one office every single day. You can go and have a dream big, do whatever you like, and you're not boxed in as much, or at least I hope not anyway. Although I think, interestingly, the only time I feel a little boxed in is sometimes with when people expect this to be a stand-up show, and then they're kind of disappointed when it's not a stand-up show, because it's not stand-up, or they expect it to be theatre, and then it's not really theatre. But the longer it's gone on, the more I've realised that, though, for every one person who is sad that it's not in the box that they wanted it to be, there's 10 people who love the fact that it's something different and it subverts expectations. So I hope, God, that sounds, I'm singing my own praises, I'm so sorry, but no, it's more the praises of the people who aren't seeking something that is definable. I don't want to be definable, so.
And it is comedy, and it is theatre, and it is puppetry, and it is pop video, and it's so many more things. And it is potentially healing for, you know, some members of the audience. But specifically, has it and is it healing you in the way you expected it to?
Oh, I don't like having expectations, because I think that expectations, that's a surefire way to be disappointed, is having expectations. But healing, yeah, it is healing. It's the thing that's healing is not necessarily performing the show. It's talking to people afterwards and hearing them talk to me about how much it's helped them, or that it's given them a permission to talk about things that they wouldn't necessarily talk about. And I've had some amazing stories told to me that I wasn't expecting at all, to have that kind of being embraced so much. And there is a community out there that really wants to tell me, you know, some people have told me that they've had psychotic experiences, some people have told me they've been sectioned, some people have told me that somebody they know has been, and then that gave me they gave them an opportunity to ask me advice about how to cope with that. And I'm not a therapist and I'm not qualified, but I am able to empathize and then also give them the right places to go to, the right charities. And I'm really, really, sounds really cheesy, but I do feel honored to be able to be somebody that they feel like they can open up to. So yeah, honesty, I love honesty in shows, so I think it's important. The more honest, and also the other shows that inspire me are the ones that are either honest in their storytelling or honest in their emotion. And for example, like Tim Key's amazingly funny, but like a lot of what he deals with is really actually quite hard hitting. Daniel Kitson, I absolutely adore. His shows aren't actually, you know, they're not true stories, but there's so much honesty in there. And yeah, for people like Boy with Tape on His Face, who obviously doesn't talk, so there's no honesty there, but there's honesty in the way that he interacts with people. That you've got people, that's the more inclusive comedy acts, that really, it's not about stand-up where it's them and us, it's about including the whole crowd on a journey and taking you all with them. With you, taking them all with you, that I'm really excited by.
So let's follow Juliet Burton around the creative process of this one. Did it begin with you just getting it all out on paper? Did the research that you filmed come first? What was the process that this finally made it to the stage?
For When I Grow Up. For When I Grow Up, I had the idea, and my first thing that I started doing was making that genuine list that is featured in the show. And in fact, that list went on a lot longer. It wasn't just up to the age of 10. I went right up to my current age, and started brainstorming about, well, how could I actually realise all those dreams? And what was it about those jobs that I really was attracted to as a child? Then did a lot of research into, as I say in the show, there's a lot more research that doesn't go into the show. For example, the ballerina one, I did approach loads of different professional dance companies in lots of different ways. And there's so each one of those particular jobs I really researched. There's even things like in the show I said that I'd never wanted to be a farmer, but my father was a farmer, well, my mother was a midwife, so I even looked into how to be a midwife. And some of those things, like the midwife, had to fall by the wayside because patient confidentiality, it's actually quite hard to just be a midwife for a day. You have to do training and all that kind of stuff, funnily enough. But the other ones that go into it, I actually then went out, approached all of the people, like the dance school that I trained at, with come and see the show to see how that successful that was. I actually went out and did those days, and we filmed them. Then did an awful lot of editing, of film footage, an awful lot of editing of the script that I suddenly hold myself away for a good weekend and just wrote a ridiculously long first draft, edited that, then started workshopping it and doing readings of it, and then just shifting around the order of it all, and now after performing it in Edinburgh last year, it changed dramatically over that month. Then performing it in Australia, it shifted again, and there's certain bits that got shorter, certain ad libs that stayed, and now it is what it is, and it's still living and breathing, which I really love. Again, it's kind of, you can't define a show, because if you say, oh, I went to see that show a year ago, that is never going to be the same show as it is now, if the performer's able to breathe within it. Because you have to have... for me, even today, I feel like I have to respond to what's going on around me, and that means that I get the funniest moments if you're really in the present moment on stage. So, yeah, I'm really lucky.
Maybe this is a Hello magazine sort of question, but so how does Juliet Burton the writer get on with Juliet Burton the performer of that writing?
Gosh, this is like being my therapist's office. Juliet Burton the writer and Juliet Burton the performer. God, I don't even know what Juliet Burton is. I'm still finding out about that relationship. It's a good question, because, to be honest, for example, we've just filmed the music video for my new show, and for one day I was just a performer and I didn't have to think about the direction or the acting. I just did the acting, you know, and I adore that, because I can just stop overanalyzing too much and just do the thing that I have always enjoyed doing, which is performing. But then if I do that without creating something for a long period of time, then my little brain fizzes with ideas and I have to get ideas out on paper. I think if I only did one, then I wouldn't be who I want to be.
But is the performer saying, look, Juliet Burton, the writer, leave the script alone now, or is it sitting in the drawer and it's now, you know, printed?
For when I grow up again, or with the new show? Because when I grow up, that's a good point. I don't tend to look at my scripts once I learn them. Once I've learned it, I feel like I have to let it go, and it's always going to be in my head. I don't think I've actually looked at the script for when I grow up since Edinburgh last year, because I know it. And if I start trying to analyse it too much, then it becomes too many words. And it has to, it starts becoming a living, breathing thing inside my own head. So sometimes that becomes obsession, and I get way too replaying it again and again and again. And sometimes it kind of sits dormant for a little while, but then it keeps growing. It does push-ups, you know. There's new ideas always springing up. And I'm really lucky that, I like improv as well. So when I'm on stage and I suddenly forget a bit, then there's always room for improv and ad-libbing. So, I think the performer possibly does take over a bit more than the writer. The writer tends to be very anxious and stressed, and is the part of me that tries to make me grind my teeth, which I'm doing an excellent job of right now. The part of me that probably takes me into my therapist's office too much. But the performer side of me is the child side of me that allows me to actually be a real human being as well.
Just two more questions, equally deep. So now build me a creative bridge from this show to the new one.
Oh, that's a great question. Like this is wonderful. Not like what's my favourite type of beer. I don't like beer. Creative bridge from when I grow up to look at me. Well, it's quite simple. It's quite simple, let me tell you. It's as simple as you make it, really. When I grow up was about what we do is who we are. And look at me is about whether who we appear to be is who we are. So when I grow up, I was very conscious that it's all about childhood, and it's kind of the very beginning of something. And it's coming out about my mental health problems, and it's all going back to childhood. Look at Me is kind of a teenage vibe. It's a teenage show. There's more gritty bits. There's a little bit more swearing. I get to be a little bit dirtier, a little bit more rebellious. And it is about who we appear to be, appearances, and my own relationship with my own body. But it also branches out, and it's not just about mental health. It's also about other physical disabilities and physical difference. So people with facial disfigurements, I've spoken to people who have physical disabilities, people who have hidden illnesses like cystic fibrosis and cancer. They're a part of the show and part of my research. And it's very much kind of the idea of appearance, how much that does define us and how much people judge us on that, and how much we can break free of that, and how much, having been a size 4 and a size 20 and everything in between, I'm very much aware that I've seen the world through the same pair of eyes. The same mad little scatty brain and head has been in very different bodies. So what would happen if I suddenly changed even more? And so I have been very blessed to have some Arts Council funding to research this, and we use prosthetics to change my look in lots of dramatic ways. So I spent time being dressed like a... I believe that the costume designer and the prosthetic makeup artist took inspiration from shows such as My Big Fat Gypsy Wedding and The Only Way is Essex and Jordan at her height of fame. I spent some time wearing outfits like that. I spent some time wearing the hijab. I spent some time wearing prosthetics to make me into an old lady. I spent some time wearing prosthetics to revisit my obese self. And I also spent some time wearing prosthetics to make me into a man. And the last bit of research that I haven't yet done is... Oh, there's a wild card day in there as well, by the way, that I'm not allowed to show you photographs of until you come to see the show, but it's very exciting. The last bit of research I haven't done yet is my nude experience. I'm going to go nude to see whether I can have a better relationship with my body by doing that. So, yes, the creative bridge is childhood dreams, aspirations... and is what we do, who we are, linking into teenage appearance, bodies, questioning is our physical self, who we are. So, and then there's more to come after that. There's more shows in the pipeline.
Good answer. As we come to the last question, which you might think is the worst or possibly the best, and to answer it, I just need a number between 7 and 21.
Ooh. I'm drawn to 18. I don't know why.
Okay, so 18. So you, at 18, steps into the show that we've just seen and sits at the back throughout. Then you come off stage and meet that 18-year-old. And what do you think she has to say about the show?
Oh, that's a brilliant question. I've realised why I picked 18, because I say that 18 in my show. I wrote that show and the new show I'm writing for that me. So the girl that was very ill and still struggling with who I am and how I fit into the world and feeling like I didn't belong. I think I have no idea what she would think. All I know is that I'm grateful that she didn't die. I'm grateful that I didn't die, because it could have not happened. I hope very much that she would want to keep fighting and keep going after seeing that show. And I've met other girls who are on a similar journey that I was when I was 18, and it just makes my world when they say that it helps them. So yeah,
I'm going to give myself a bit of artistic license, and just for a bit of fun maybe, yeah, and the 6-year-old you sees it, what does the 6-year-old say?
She'd probably say, where's my bike, I want to go out and ride a bike now. The 6-year-old me is probably somewhere else, wanting to be somewhere else. Definitely fidget. I would never stop fidgeting.
Juliet Burton, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.